Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Zimbabwe National Army denies any links with the abduction of political activist Itai Dzamara as police summon his brother for questioning.
Five opposition parties form a coalition in an attempt to beat President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party in the 2018 general elections.
The parties are Mavambokusi Ledon, led by Simba Makoni, Professor Walsh Mencube's Movement for Democratic Change Formation, Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, led by Elton Mango.
As Zimbabwean has made it into the Forbes Africa magazine's under 30 distinguished young entrepreneurs in Africa.
This gentleman clearly, he grew up in hard times in Zimbabwe. The country was collapsing, and one day they had a debate at school about these issues, and he decided then to change his life. He said he was going to try to start a business to solve the unemployment problems.
And a pardoned Zimbabwean female prisoner is now into the tongue-twisting profession, poetry.
From prison, I managed to beat over 2,300 people, and I won various items.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The Zimbabwe National Army has denied any involvement in the disappearance of political activist Itai Dzamara, leader of Occupy Africa Unity Square, which wants President Robert Mugabe to step down for allegedly failing to properly run Zimbabwe. Reacting to allegations by Itai's brother, Dr. Patson Dzamara, that the Army's intelligence unit was involved in Itai's abduction 15 months ago, Army spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Alpheus Makotore said these were a figment of his imagination. Lieutenant Colonel Makotere said the National Army's intelligence unit does not take orders from any political party, and as a result, Dzamara is only seeking some media attention in claiming that they were instructed by the ruling ZANU-PF party to allegedly abduct Itai.
Dzamara claimed yesterday that his family has obtained photographs of his brother in detention and names of the people linked to his abduction. One of the pictures released by his family shows a person sitting in a dark place with his or her hands tied to the back and head covered in what looks like a bandage. Itai's wife, Shefra, says the person in the picture is Itai Dzamara.
Meanwhile, detectives from the Law and Order section have asked Dr. Dzamara to visit their offices in connection with claims that the family has information about Itai's abductors. Charles Kwaramba, who is Dzamara's lawyer, tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that he will only be able to take him to the police tomorrow morning since he was too busy today.
Mr. Dzamara called me and informed me that the police wanted to interview him. I wasn't available because I've spent the whole day in court seeing other cases. But in the afternoon, I also communicated with the police. They called me. They asked that if I could attend because Mr. Dzamara wanted me to be present during the interview. Unfortunately, we couldn't make it this afternoon. So in my discussion with the police, we have agreed that we will attend tomorrow morning and the interview will be carried out.
Is he willing to cooperate with the police?
Yes, he has always been willing to cooperate with the police. He likes everything that will see a result come out in respect of his missing brother. So he has no reason whatsoever to withhold any information from the police or to avoid interacting with the police. He has always been cooperating. We've gone to the police together many times before, even in times that have not been reported. So we have actually been interacting with the police regarding the matter. He will do everything in his power to make sure that something is done about his missing brother, including going public about any information that he might have.
That was Charles Kwaramba, Patson Dzamara's lawyer, on the line from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Five opposition parties formed a coalition today that will challenge President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party in the 2018 general elections. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The parties are Mavambokusi Ledon, led by Simba Makoni, Professor Walsh Mencube's Movement for Democratic Change Formation, Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, led by Elton Mangoma, Democratic Assembly for Restoration and Empowerment, and Zimbabweans United for Democracy. Tendai Biti's People's Democratic Party and ZAPU, led by former ZIPRA Supremo Dumiso Dabengwa, say they still need to consult their members before joining the coalition. The parties say other opposition groups like Morgan Tsvangirai's MDCT and former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's Zimbabwe People First are also keen to join the coalition. Zunde leader Gilbert Dzikiti, who was appointed the first chairman of the coalition, called the Coalition of Democrats, or CORD, said the coming together of the five political parties was an important milestone in the struggle for democracy in Zimbabwe.
CORD is the answer to a better Zimbabwe. CORD has made a commitment to work with civil society, churches, and other stakeholders to craft and agree on a Zimbabwe that works for all of us. As CORD, we realize the need for leaders to be servants of the people.
Nguve noted that the parties that signed the agreement are keeping their doors open for other political parties to join the coalition.
We have committed ourselves to talk with all those who say they are opposed to the current government, and we have said, let us come together, whether you are MDCT, whether you are People First, or by whatever description you are called. Anyone who will not be with us by the time we get to 2018 will be because they have excluded themselves, not because we have excluded them.
These sentiments were echoed by MKD leader Simba Makoni, who contested as an independent presidential candidate in 2008.
We are saying today we are making a commitment to work together. That is the important message. The past is important in learning what not to do and how not to do good things.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti, who now leads the People's Democratic Party and attended the signing ceremony, said his political formation would join the coalition once he gets the nod from his party's executive committee.
We haven't had our general council, so we are going to go to the general council in the next few weeks, and then we'll come. But we've been part of the negotiating process.
ZAPU spokesperson Mjobiza Nuku said his party was waiting for direction from its congress set for August this year.
The party leadership does not have the mandate to sign the agreement at this point. The party's National People's Council and legal advisors have cautioned the National Executive Committee that such a major commitment is better taken by the ZAPU Congress, which is, in any case, due before the end of August 2016.
Tsvangirai's MDCT says it was not invited for the signing ceremony. However, the main opposition party spokesperson, Obet Gutu, said the MDCT was willing to work with all pro-democracy parties and groups in a grand coalition that would challenge ZANU-PF's rule come 2018.
What I can just advise listeners for now is that as the MDC, our party leader, Dr. Morgan Tsvangirai, is actually the one who is leading us in the process or the processes around coalition talks with other political parties.
Rugare Gumbo, interim spokesperson of the newly formed Zimbabwe People First Party, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, told Studio 7 by phone that his party was also not consulted regarding the formation of the coalition.
Well, look, we are not part of them, but we don't deny that people making alliances or coalitions.
Mangoma said the leaders of the parties in the coalition are expected to meet in the run-up to the 2018 national elections to select their presidential candidate.
One of the important things that CORD brings is that we should be able to work together, and particularly on fielding one candidate for each electoral post.
Sources close to the coalition negotiations said the five parties rushed to announce the formation of the coalition so that they would have negotiating power when it comes to fielding candidates. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us as we discuss teenage pregnancy, as the recent Zimbabwe Demographic Health Survey shows 1 in 10 adolescent girls giving birth each year.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
Remember Nkosana Mazibisa? He's the budding entrepreneur from Bulawayo that we featured on Studio 7 2 weeks ago after he won a ticket to the coveted Mandela Washington Fellowship among 60 other uniquely promising young Zimbabweans this year. Now Mazibisa has made yet another stride to the top by making it into the Forbes Africa magazine's under 30 distinguished young entrepreneurs from across Africa. Mazibisa is founder of Mazibisa Inc. and a food company called Swad, A Taste of India. He is being featured in the Forbes magazine issue coming out tomorrow together with 30 other promising young entrepreneurs from countries like South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and several others. Forbes Africa managing editor Chris Bishop tells Studio 7 reporter Ntungameli Nkomo the chosen 30, including Mazibisa, are some of the finest young entrepreneurs there is on the African continent.
Some of them will be on the cover of Forbes Africa in 10, maybe 20 years' time. And what we wanted to do, we wanted to catch them when they were young and in the first flush of youth as entrepreneurs. And we wanted to show exactly to the rest of the continent what we could do, because Forbes Africa believes that the state coffers on this continent can no longer afford for to provide the jobs and to provide the wealth that people need. An increasingly growing youthful population needs, and we think that entrepreneurs are the people who are going to create the wealth and the jobs. So that was a particular interest.
Looking at this list as an anecdote, where would you say the African continent is headed in terms of job creation, entrepreneurship, and economic growth?
A lot of people are turning over close to $1 million a year. Many of them are already employing scores of people in their businesses. For instance, Momar Maztal of Gambia, he's got 140 employees, 120 which are women. He turned over $1.6 million in 2015. Here's a guy who started up a clothing brand, Malika Clothing. His father was a diplomat, fine. He wanted to follow his father, turned it away, started making his own clothes, and he's made a fortune and made his own way, and he's created 140 jobs for Africans.
You also have our own Nkosana Mazibisa from Zimbabwe, Bulawayo, on this list. What exactly did you see in him?
Well, again, this is a lot of context here. We've written quite a bit of stuff on Bulawayo and how it used to be known as the city that exudes smoke and how it's struggling now. And this gentleman came out as part of that story. He grew up in hard times in Zimbabwe. The country was collapsing, and one day they had a debate at school about these issues, and he decided then to change his life. He said he was going to try to start a business to solve the unemployment problems and to revive the industries. And he founded a food retail brand, Swad, The Taste of India, and Mazibisa Inc., a brand strategy consultancy firm in Bulawayo. Now, this guy here is stuck in his hometown. He's there building business. He's there building himself as an entrepreneur. He's there creating jobs for people.
That was Forbes Africa editor.
Coming up,
a closer look at bond notes as Catholics, business executives and others discuss new policies designed to fix ailing Zimbabwe economy.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The killing of a Golira Saturday at the Cincinnati Zoo to save a four-year-old boy who fell into the animal's enclosure remains a widely reported story in a 24-hour news cycle that is increasingly driven by social media.
Poland has launched a new bid to extradite filmmaker Roman Polanski to the United States, where he's wanted for a 1977 child sex conviction.
And in Ivory Coast, the wife of former President Laurent Gbagbo goes on trial Tuesday. Simone Gbagbo, also known as the Iron Lady, is accused of crimes against humanity, prisoners of war, and the civilian population for all alleged role in that country's 2010 post-election violence that killed more than 3,000 people. She has already been handed a 20-year jail sentence for attacking state authority. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
The Roman Catholic Vicar General Kennedy Mugudi says politics is required to ensure that new policy measures to revive the economy announced by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe are successful. Mugudi says depositors and captains of industry are skeptical about the new measures that will lead to the introduction of bond notes as they have lost confidence in the government's economic policies. Reporter Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
In remarks at a discussion organized by the Catholic Bishops Social Communications Commission on whether Zimbabwe could be better off without the U.S. currency, Mugudi said the interventions by the central bank should have been done after consultations with all stakeholders. The RBZ announced a raft of measures to revive the economy, which include, among other issues, daily cash withdrawal limits, the introduction of bond notes, and use of plastic money. But depositors and industry have come out strongly against the measures, in particular the introduction of bond notes. Mugudi said they have all the reasons to be skeptical about these new measures.
While the government is making frantic efforts to dismiss the fears by the depositors and investors, the situation on the ground shows that the people have lost trust and confidence. That people have lost trust and confidence in the economic policy, and also they've lost trust in the credibility of the policies that you are coming up with.
He said the people's fears are reasonable given the past experiences where many of them are poorer today as a result of government policies.
Many are in their poverty state today because they did not recover from that backstab that they experienced. And today when you ask them, just continue to look forward. No, they will look backward because they know that somebody can come from the back and stab me again. So this is the reason why people are very careful. And also maybe this is the reason why people are saying, I would rather go and take out my $500 and keep it with me.
But Barclays Bank Zimbabwe Managing Director George Gwamatanga said the interventions by the central bank are welcome given the indiscipline by depositors, banks and other players. He said if not properly applied, as was happening in Zimbabwe, the US dollar could be harmful to the economy. Gwamatanga said putting daily withdrawal limits at 1,000 per day was unrealistic given that the average monthly salary in Zimbabwe was $374.
I actually think that a weekly withdrawal limit of 500 would be adequate for day-to-day transacting. I think it will be.
Guamatanga admitted that the cost of using plastic money and real-time gross settlement or RTGS was too high. He urged fellow bankers to revise their charges to encourage the banking public to use plastic money and RTGS. He added that Zimbabwe over-opened its economy when it dollarized in 2009 by allowing everyone to use foreign currency, even for local services. Guamatanga said, in light of the rampant abuse of the U.S. dollar, the RBZ's new policy measures are welcome.
We need to find a means of transacting, a means of payment which doesn't get abused. The U.S. dollar as a means for local transaction, as a means for transacting here in Zimbabwe, has been abused. And there's absolutely no way as an economy we can sustain it. Let's be honest with each other.
RBZ Governor John Mangulia said it was good that some bankers supported these measures and would consider their proposals to lower the daily withdrawal limits and charges. Despite the 1,000 daily withdrawal limits, banks have set limits at between $200 and $400 due to the cash crunch. Guamatanga suggested a weekly $500 withdrawal limit. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Central Bank Chief John Mangudja says the bond notes are set to be introduced in October this year. He says they are designed to boost exports.
A 31-year-old Kudzai Nyoka says she still can't believe she is now reunited with her two children she left 2 years ago when she was sentenced to 7 years in prison and locked up at Chikurubi for fraud. Nyoka is one of the 2,000 prisoners who were pardoned recently by President Robert Mugabe. Only two women remain in prison following the presidential pardon. Nyoka is now a transformed person, and she turned into a poet while she was in prison and managed to win a national award while she was still in prison. She speaks to Studio 7 about her newly discovered talent and how she will use it to survive outside prison.
We woke up in the morning on a normal holiday and were expecting our families to come and visit us. And then the next thing we were told that the president had pardoned us and all the women were going home.
Had you been prepared before that?
Not even. We were not prepared. We were actually serving our sentences as usual, waiting to grace on the day like any other normal days.
Take us through a normal day in prison as a female prisoner. What was it like?
A normal day starts at 6 o'clock, and then we do our various activities. There are various rehabilitation activities that take place in prison. For example, market gardening, cutting and designing, flowering, cooking, what was basket making, and other activities. So when you wake up 6 o'clock, we have our breakfast, and then we go to our different activities, and then we have lunch around about 12 o'clock, and then a normal day clock at 4 o'clock.
What about the food? A lot of people have been issuing out reports that there's not enough food and the conditions are not very palatable. Tell us about that.
I've been there. Food was there. There was never a time, believe me, there was never a time where I went to bed hungry. We had three meals a day. We had breakfast at 6. We had lunch at 12. We had supper at 3. There was never a day where we went to bed hungry. Speaking from where I was staying, they were favorable for women. It was not as warm because prison is not a hotel, but I'm saying they were favorable because we actually had other mothers that had their children there. I never saw any one of the kids sick.
Tell us about yourself, your personal life. How many children do you have?
I have two children, one aged 8 and one aged 4.
What was their reaction when they found out that you were going back home?
They didn't believe it even up to now. They are still startled. Each and every time I come out of their house, they ask me if I'm coming back. So I'm sure maybe they are thinking I might just go back and never come back again.
You discovered a talent while you were in prison. Tell us a little bit about that.
Prior to prison, I was a human resource officer. But then when I got into prison, I started writing. It took me some time to accept that I had been imprisoned. So through counseling, through the rehabilitation office, they advised me to start writing my emotions down. And when they saw the creativeness in my writing, they encouraged me to start writing poetry so that I could go and stand on competitive platforms. They then facilitated that I would go and compete on a talent show, which is called Starbright, whereby people from from all over the nation come in with their different talents and compete from prison. I managed to beat over 2,300 people and I won various items, which I took home, which took care of my family.
That was 30-year-old Kudzai Nyoka, a female prisoner who was pardoned last week following a presidential edict. Speaking to us from Harare, to hear her poem, go to our website, www.voazimbabwe.com.
The release of the 2015 Zimbabwe Democratic Health Survey has left advocates calling for intervention as statistics show high rates of teenage pregnancies. The survey indicates that 22% of adolescent females aged between 15 and 19 in Zimbabwe bear children. The survey shows that 1 in 6 teenagers have given birth in the past year and 5% are pregnant with their first child. The survey notes that the trends of teenage pregnancy and motherhood remains a social and health concern. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks with Dr. Elopis Banda, who says it's time for stakeholders to review intervention strategies.
I carried out a survey way back in 1999 to look at the age of sexual debut between the urban and rural communities. And at that time, we found that people actually were sexually active by the age of about 13, 14 in the rural setting, whereas the age was a bit higher in the urban setting. So the fact that people have been sexually active at a young age is not new, but what has not been done is to either recognize that as a fact and address it properly through education, or take measures to stop it happening in the first place. So the challenge that we have perhaps is also that we revert to cultural biases.
And moving forward, Dr. Sibanda, is there any way to remedy this situation? What, in your view, should stakeholders start to do?
I think the demographic survey is an eye-opener, which says children will get pregnant and children will die giving birth. And therefore, I believe this should set in motion a train of events which leads to some sort of introspection and also a review of whether what we're doing was adequate or not. And in my opinion, the interventions that have been put in place have been inadequate and they failed to save the lives of these young children.
That was Dr. Elopis Banda, a medical practitioner on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our host of The Connection will be talking with listeners about child pregnancies in Zimbabwe. Recent statistics show that child pregnancies are on the rise in the country, so don't forget to join Tatenda Gumbo and Ntungameli Nkomo, the host of The Youth Connection.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The Zimbabwe National Army denies any links to the abduction of political activist Itai Dzamara as police summon his brother for questioning.
Five opposition parties form a coalition in an attempt to beat President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party in the 2018 general elections.
And that's our broadcast this evening.
Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. For more on our top stories, you can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number, 001-202-465-0318. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.